Here's what all of us struggle with. Here's what almost certainly somebody that you know struggles with. I certainly struggle with this. We want to be in control. We want to be in control. Some of you want to be in control to such a degree that you may have been, please don't elbow anybody at this point in the sermon. Some of you have been called at some points in your life a control, what's the word? Yeah, control freak. And some of your arguments have been revolving around, well, I just think you're trying to control me and you're a control freak. And you've had that conversation, and some control is good, because there's some things that you need to control. You need to control, you know, what type of food goes into your body. You need to control, you know, what type of things do you watch and what type of things do you listen to. Control, especially in families, is valuable because it lets me know, when do I need to get to my haircut? Well, not my haircut, but other people's haircuts. Like, when do I need to get my kids to their haircut? My haircut person this week had to call my wife and say, hey, wasn't Adler supposed to be here for a haircut? And the person that's in control had to call me and say, weren't you supposed to take it? Yeah, so I was, and I was 30 minutes late. It all worked out fine. Don't worry about it. But control is good. We need to have some control. It's how things happen. The challenge is when we try to find control in things that is really in God's control. Because as Christians, a temptation that we have is that it's easy to want to wrestle control away from God, especially if your personality leans more towards control. If your personality leans more towards, I need to have things just so. If God doesn't seem to be doing things on your timeline or how you want them to be done, it's easy to say, well, I need to get control of that. Or things happen in my life and people agitate me and people aggravate me and I need to control them. I need to control circumstances, all of these things. But here's the tension that we feel when it comes to controlling those things. Again, there's some control that's good. There's some control that you need. Some control is how you get things done. But the other side, the more poisonous side of control, here's what I would suggest is true, that the more we try to control, the less peace we have. I would invite you to look at your own life. That if you are the one that has to feel like I've got to keep all the plates spinning, that everything is up to me, that I've got to make sure that it all works out, as I do that, the stress goes up and up and up and up and up. And then if I finally get everything working, if everything finally is going the way that I want to, then the stress is now I've got to keep it going. The plates are all spinning and I've got to keep them spinning. And it's my peace goes down. The more control I try to wrestle away, the less peace that I have. And here's the dilemma that we face, because control gives you a promise. The reason that you and I move towards control is that it gives us, it has this carrot. The carrot of control is security, but what it delivers is anxiety. We think in our mind that if I could just control everything, then I would be safe. And I would be secure, and everything would work, and we wouldn't have any problems. But isn't it true that if you've looked at your life, that it actually has delivered not more feelings of peace, but more feelings of anxiety? Because, well, how's it all going to work out now? Now it's going, but what about tomorrow? And now it's all coming together, but what about later on in life? And I just get anxious and anxious and anxious. And so Jesus comes along, and he says, you don't actually have to be in control. You don't have to be the one that makes sure it all works together. There is an invitation to trust. There is an invitation to let God do what God could do. There's an opportunity for us to live open-handed and say, God, I'm not going to take out of your hands the things that should be in your hands. But what that requires is what Jesus' word is going to be, is humility. It's a humbleness that recognizes I have a role to play, and God has a role to play. And I ought not get into God's lane. And I don't need to wrestle away from God the things that are in his control. I need to be humble. And Jesus said, Matthew chapter 5, verse number 5, blessed are the humble. Blessed are the people that have a good and right view of myself and a good view and a right view of God. Why? Well, they will inherit the earth. Now, depending on what translation you're using, your translation might say meek. It's the same word. But it's blessed are those who realize I can't do everything. Blessed are those who realize that I shouldn't do everything. Blessed are those who realize that I ought not take from God the things that are God's. Blessed are those, here's the way to say it, are those who have a right view of themselves, what is God calling me to, and what lane is God calling me to live in, and I have a right view of God, that he is God and I'm not. And so he can see things that I can't see, and he knows things that I don't know, and he can see around the corners that I can't see around. And so I have to have a right view of God that says, I don't see what he's doing, but he must be doing something. And I don't understand what he's doing, but he must be doing something. I have the right view of me that I'm finite and God is infinite. I have the right view of myself as that there are some things that God has called me to do, and he's not called me to just be on a bump on a long log, but he's also not called me to be God. And I have to be careful that I don't take from God what is his. That, like the old children's song says, he really does have the whole world in his hands. And that includes my world. That includes the world of my family. It includes the world of my work. It includes the world of my emotions. It includes the world of my future. He really does have the whole world in his hands. But the world can't be in his hands and my hands at the same time. Blessed are the humble who recognize he is God, I'm not. Blessed are those who stop trying to wrestle away control from God, and instead I just rest in his sovereignty. And then there's a promise on the other end of that. Blessed are those who are humble. They will inherit the earth. He says, on the other side of resting and humility, recognizing who God is and recognizing who I am, the promise on the other side of that is those things that we've been chasing will have. That I inherit peace because I'm humble. I can inherit joy because I'm humble. Inheriting, you know the difference between inheriting and earning? You earn a paycheck because you've worked for it. You inherit something because you're part of a family. You work for something and you're owed a paycheck. You inherit because this is just the person that I am in a family. And Jesus says, if you can recognize who God is and who you are and make sure you maintain those roles, those things that you want, the chasing of peace that you're chasing, the chasing of joy, the chasing of contentment, the chasing of do I matter, does my life matter, all of those things, will you inherit those things because I'm letting God be God. I don't have to be God when he is. Now, when we, again, especially if your translation says meek, we think of that as, well, that must mean that I'm weak and I get ran over and everybody takes advantage of me. But this word, and we're going to see a lot of kind of unique Greek and Hebrew words today, because the Greek and the Hebrew have kind of a deeper meaning than what English can mean. But that word humble or meek, it really means strength that's under control. The best illustration for it is this powerful, you've seen them in pastures maybe, this powerful horse that's been perfectly trained. That horse could run you over and kill you and maim you just like that. It's so strong, and yet it's been trained. And so that power is under control. It's under the master's hand. And so I saw this video a couple weeks ago. It was awesome. This beautiful, powerful barrel race horse was being driven by this. This girl had to have been 3 years old. It was unbelievable. And she was ripping around those barrels. And you know what? That horse could have taken her out. That horse could have bucked her off. That girl did not have more strength than the horse did, but it was strength under control. And every time that little girl touched the reins, the horse moved. That's the invitation that God gives to us. That have your strength. God's given you that strength, but I want you to be under control. I want you to be aware and listen to, where is the Spirit leading? Where is the Spirit trying to get you to pull back? Where is the Spirit trying to get you to move forward? It's not that you get ran over. It's not that everybody takes advantage of you. It's I'm strong, but I'm strong enough to recognize I'm going to sometimes pull back if that's what my master is telling me. It's my decision every day. My strength is not for my advantage. I'm going to be led and I'm going to follow my master. He's the one that's given me my strength. And I'm going to use it where he calls me to use it. Some of us have misused, let's be honest. All of us probably have misused our strength. I've misused my strength to hurt other people. The strength of my tongue, I've lost my temper, and the strength of my tongue, it wasn't under control, and I've hurt people. The strength of my emotions have hurt other people. The strength of my momentary decisions have hurt other people. And so Jesus comes along and said, blessed are the humble. Blessed are those that have their strength under control. You will inherit the earth. The same exact word Jesus used to describe himself. He says it this way in Matthew, come to me all that are weary and burden. Some of you can relate. We talked about that at communion. This would be the label that you would put on yourself. If I was to ask you how you were, you would say, well, I'm weary and I'm burdened. I'm just worn out. He says, I will give you rest. How do you do that, Jesus? So he says, take my yoke upon you, learn from me. Then he describes himself. He's lowly and he's meek. He's lowly and he's humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. He says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. You know, if I had a conversation with you, and if you told me all of the anxiety and stress and frustration and angst that you're going through, if I had to triage that, not for everybody, but for most people, the triage and the treatment would be, I bet you're trying to control more than you're supposed to control. I bet you feel like all of the world is on your shoulders and it's your job to make sure it all comes together. But Jesus invites us, I'm humble, I'm lowly, and you can come to me and you can put on that humility. You can put on that lowliness and you can rest in that. He connects humility with peace, humility with rest. And that's what some of us need. And so this morning, what we're going to see is that trust is the key that unlocks humility in our life. That the less humility I have, what that really means is the less trust that I have. But the more that I'm trusting God, the more I recognize, oh, he really is in control. Oh, he really does know what he's doing. Oh, I really can rest in him. What's interesting is that Jesus, in Matthew chapter 5, verse 5, he's actually quoting King David from Psalm 37. And so that's what we're going to look at today. If you have a printed Bible, and if you want to follow along, Psalm 37, David is writing this, and he's an old man. And you've probably read some of David's story, but David has been on both sides of the coin. David has had all sorts of different life experiences, and some of them he's wrestled control away from God. You can read his story for yourself, that he says, this is all up to me. I have to be the man. I'm the king. I have all the power. I have all the strength. And so it's up to me. And he took control away from God, and it ended, as you can imagine, in disaster. And there was other times and seasons of his life where he said, I'm just going to rest in humility. I'm going to see who God is, and I'm going to see who I am, and I'm going to let God do what he can do while I do what he's called me to do. And it ended beautifully and in peace. You can read David's story for yourself. And so at the end of David's life, again, an old man, he's reflecting on these things, and he gives us one thing to avoid and five things to lean into. One thing that we should all avoid, one thing that some of you might be going through today, and then five things that, what does it look like to be humble? How do I actually live that out? I like the idea of blessed are those who are humble because they will inherit the earth. But practically, day in and day out, like when I go to work tomorrow and when I go into my marriage and I'm trying to parent my kids, how does that live itself out? David gives us the answer. Psalm chapter 37, we're going to start in verse number 1 and 2. It's going to be up here on the screens if you want to follow along. Hey, don't be agitated. Now, this is a great verse that some of you should put on your fridge. Put this on your mirror. Put this on wherever you'll see it each day, because you live and work with and encounter agitating people. Let's just be honest. You said, I do, to some agitating person, and that just happens, and you gave birth to some agitating people, and you work with some agitating people. And so David says, hey, don't be agitated. And he goes to the extreme of evildoers, people that know the right thing and don't, people that are trying to take advantage of you, people that are trying to cut your legs out from under you. But we have all these agitations in life. He says, don't be agitated by evildoers. Don't envy those who do wrong. They wither quickly like grass, and they wilt like tender green plants. Because here's what's true for all of us, is that especially in the world we live in, we can, if we're not careful, live in a constant state of agitation. Your wash machine, right? You know what an agitator is? You've got one in your wash machine later. Look at it. All its sole job is just to shake things up, is just to stir things up. And we can live there, that I'm just constantly shaken up. I'm constantly stirred up. People are bumping into me and I get aggravated and I get annoyed and I get frustrated and why is this happening? And it doesn't seem fair. And David comes along and says, don't be agitated by all of these things. There's countless opportunities. Some of them are big and some of them are small. And I don't know what's agitating you today. Some of you came to church this morning agitated. Some of you are going back to a house so that you can finish up the agitated argument that you started on the way to church. I get it. We've all been there. But here's what's true for all of us. You've never agitated your way to peace, right? You've never gotten yourself so agitated that things worked out. You've never gotten yourself so spun up and so all wrecked in your mind that all of a sudden you got far enough to where it all worked out. But you've agitated your way away from some really harsh conversations, and you've agitated yourself into some sleepless nights, and you've agitated yourself into some short tempers. We all have done that. David says, hey, don't be agitated. Don't let yourself be the one that I've got to fix this. The whole world's on my shoulders. That things that are going on in the world, I don't have to be the one that solves all them. I'm going to have a right view of me. I'm going to have a right view of God. And then he goes on and he says, hey, the things that are agitating you right now, they wither quickly. In other words, here's what David's saying, and you know this to be true. We just don't live it out. That the thing that you're agitated by today isn't probably going to matter in a week. Isn't it true that all of us have had sleepless nights about something that in a week, in an hour, in a month, certainly in a year, don't matter at all? And we got so spun up, and we had to apologize for some of the things that we said, and we had to ask for forgiveness, and it came from a root of agitation, which comes from a root of, and this is, we just got to diagnose ourselves. We can only heal when we tell ourselves the truth. The root of that, of trying to be in control of everything, at the end of the day, really is pride. Pride tells me, hey, me, you've got to do this. God's not doing it. God's not taking care of it. It's up to me. It's a prideful attitude that pushes me into control, that pushes me into I'm agitated because they're not doing it the way that I think it should be done. They're not doing it on the timeline I think it should be done. At the root of it, if we dig just a little bit lower, it's pride. And Jesus said, blessed are the humble. And so then David gives us these five things that we can do when we find ourselves agitated, which you will. You're going to be agitated by all sorts of things all throughout your life. And David says, when that moment of agitation comes, I want you to do five different things. I want you to trust in the Lord, take delight in the Lord, commit your way to the Lord, be silent before the Lord. That's the hardest one. Put your hope in the Lord. Now notice, each one of them, it points to the same place. It's not my strength. It's not my plan, not my timing, not my ability, not how good I am. It's just the Lord. That I have a right view of God, I have a right view of me. I have a right view of what is God's role and God's responsibility. I have a right view of what is my role and my responsibility. We're going to burn through these really fast. Get ready. Here's the first thing, that humble people, they trust in the Lord. Verse number three, it says, trust in the Lord, and then I want you to do what is good. Dwell in the land and live security. That this is more than just intellectually agreeing with something, because many of us would say, yeah, I trust God. Of course I trust God. But then when we go into our week, we don't live like that. Trusting is the difference between saying, I think this chair will hold me, and actually sitting down in it. For many of us, we've taken the posture of, yes, intellectually, I trust God, but in the activity and then in the daily choices of my life, I trust me. I trust my strength. I trust my ability. And so David says, hey, trust in the Lord, not just in your mind, but actually in your day in and day out life. God, I'm living open-handed. I'm putting you in your rightful place, because there's all sorts of things. We can't control what necessarily happens, but we can control who we trust. I can't control what you do. I can't control what the boss does. I can't control what my job does, but I can control whose hands am I putting this in? Whose hands are really going to be in control and moving my life? And then he says, hey, in the moment while you're waiting on God, while you're trusting, while you're saying, God, I'm not gonna wrestle control away from you, I'm gonna keep doing the right thing. I'm gonna keep showing up. I'm going to keep praying. I'm going to keep being faithful. I'm going to keep doing what God's called me to do, because it's not that I just let God do everything and I step back and I just wait and I just see, well, God's called you to do something. He's called you to do good. Trust in the Lord and do what is good. That I don't have to be in control when I'm trusting the one who does. I don't have to keep all the plates spinning. I don't have to manipulate. I don't have to control. I want to be humble. Blessed are those who are humble. They're going to inherit that peace. They're going to inherit joy. They're going to inherit all of those things. I just got to, who is God? And who am I? We trust the Lord. That's what humble people do. And then, second, humble people, we delight. We didn't use that word enough. We delight in the Lord. Verse number 4, take delight in the Lord, and he will give you your heart's desires. So this is a step above trust. Trust says God's reliable. I can count on him. Delight says God is enjoyable. You see the difference? The trust says, yeah, I'll lean my life onto him. I'll lean all of my future onto him. But delight says, well, that's the best thing to do. I don't have to do it begrudgingly. I don't have to do it through gritting my teeth. I delight in the Lord. And when I delight in him, what David says is my desires start to align with his desires, and he'll give me the desires of my heart. The more that you enjoy God, the less you need everything else to go your way. Because you know that ultimately my source is God. My joy comes from God. My peace comes from God. My security comes from God. And so the more I delight in him, the more that I lean into him, the less I need you to be okay. The less I need you to do everything for me. I just delight, I trust in him. Because, and here's, again, we just have to be honest with ourselves. The thing that I delight the most in generally controls me. That if I delight the most in my bank account being big, then that controls me. And if the 401k takes a nosedive, my delight is gone, then I've got to wrestle back control and I lose my peace and I lose my joy and I look back and it's because my delight was in something shaky. And if my delight is, you can name it for yourself, if your delight is in being popular and being influential, well, as long as everybody's looking at me and all eyes are on me and life is going great, if that's where my delight is, then I'm okay. But what happens when I get to the crossroads and I have to follow God or I have to follow the crowd? And if I follow God, then the crowd kind of turns on me. And if my delight is in them, then I delight in the Lord. When he's the one that brings me joy, that I'm unshakable. I still have things that frustrate me and annoy me. I still have things that agitate me. I still have problems in life, but I'm rooted in, man, I'm trusting in him. And I'm delighting in him. And then here's the third thing that humble people do. Humble people, they commit their way to the Lord. I love this word commit. This word, again, this was written in Hebrew. And this word commit means to roll something off onto somebody else. So the picture is, think of at the end of a day, these huge camels that carry these huge burdens on their back. At the end of the day, they kneel down and the owners roll that burden off their back. That's that word commit. And in verse number 5, it says this, commit your way to the Lord. In other words, all those things that you've been trying to carry, all of that burden that you've been trying to bear, what would it look like if you rolled that on to God? It requires humility. It requires kneeling down before God and saying, you're going to have to carry the things that I wasn't meant to carry. Commit your way. Not just commit your moment, but my daily life. I'm going to commit it to the Lord. I'm going to trust in him, and he will act. Not he might act, not if I do all the right things, then he'll act, but as I commit my way, as I commit my daily life, I'm rolling these things off of my shoulders onto God. God is the one that will act. And he might not do it on my timeline. He might not do it exactly the way that I want him to do it and when I want him to do it, but I'm trusting in him. I'm delighting in him and I'm committing my way. Proud people carry their own burdens. Humble people know they can't. The reason that many of us are worn out, the reason that many of us need to come to Jesus because we're weary and heavy burdened is we've been trying to carry things that, honestly, they're God's to carry. It's exhausting to carry unforgiveness. It's exhausting to carry strife. It's exhausting to have to try to manage your whole life on your own. And so David says, what would it look like? Roll that off. Give it to somebody that can actually carry it. Proud people, again, proud people have to carry everything. I'll show them. I'm not going to let them get away with that. oh, I'm going to let them know that I'm really the one in charge. I have to be the one. Ah, it's pride. It's pride. And it won't let you inherit the earth. Humble people recognize this is who God is. This is who I am. There are some things that God has called me to carry, but there's also some things that the world tries to put on my shoulders that I'm not called to carry, and so I'm going to commit to him. Can I just invite some of you, just pastorally, just this may be the only thing that you came for this morning. Would you just consider to travel light? As you go through life, there's going to be all sorts of things that try to get put on your shoulders. Unforgiveness, strife, resentment, gossip, all of these things. Try to, what would it look like? Just travel light. I'm not going to carry that. I'm going to release that to God. I'm going to trust that, man, his timing is not my timing, but his timing is perfect. I want God to do this right now and in this way, and I wanted him to do it yesterday. But God, I trust in you. I delight in you, and I'm going to commit my ways to you. And watch just what happens to your heart. Watch if your heart doesn't start to soften. Watch if you don't start to breathe a little bit easier. Watch if your blood pressure doesn't start to come down, because it's not all up to you. You're not the one that has to keep all the plates spinning. You're not the one that has to have the weight of the world. Peter said, cast all of your cares onto him. Because why? Well, he cares about you. He cares about you. Don't carry things you weren't meant to carry. Here's the third thing, or fourth thing rather. Humble people, this is so hard, are silent before the Lord. This is the hardest one of all for me. Now, for some of you, this might be the easiest one. But for me, this is hard. Because this means that I don't always have to defend myself. That when other people are coming against me, and I wanna pride up, and I wanna let them know, and I wanna make sure that they know, David says, well, what would it look like if you were silent? Jesus did this. If you remember the Easter story, where Jesus was before Pilate, and they kept answer. They kept throwing all these accusations at him, and they said, and you said, and what it was Jesus. He was just silent. Did you know that not every accusation needs an answer? Not every accusation has to make you, but you can just let your character speak for itself. There's just times where I'm silent before the Lord. Here's what David said, verse number 7. Be silent before the Lord. Wait expectantly for him. I'm going to let God vindicate me. I know these people are lying about me. I know these people are talking about me. I'm going to let God be God, and I'm going to let me be me. And I'm going to just take him at his word. I'm going to be silent before the Lord. I'm going to wait expectantly for him. And David is saying, hey, there's some people that are jerks, and there's people that are telling lies, and there's people that are spreading rumors. Don't be agitated by the one that prospers in his way. He's admitting that there's a time and a season where, because of other people's lies and because of other people's deceit, it might look from the outside like they're winning. And so then we say, well, God, you're not doing it, so I have to wrestle control. And they're winning, and I'm losing, and people are saying, and I don't know what it's going to. He says it's going to happen. Don't be agitated by the one who prospers in his way, by the person that carries out evil plans. Verse number 8, refrain from anger and give up rage. He says it again, don't be agitated. It only brings harm. And we've all experienced this. Have you ever just flipped out and lost your temper and said all the things that you wanted to say and then turn around and said, man, I'm so glad I did that. That really helped a lot. I just gave them the business, and I told them, and man, it made all the difference. We feel better for a moment, but at the end, isn't it true that when we power up, other people power down? You ever seen that in your marriage? You power up, and you say the thing, and you really tell them, and that you win the argument, you lose the relationship. Is it worth it? Yeah, you won in that moment. You got them to do what you wanted them to do, but you can't find them anywhere. They're not returning your phone calls. They're not returning your texts. Yeah, I mean, you powered up, but refrain from anger. Give up rage. Don't be agitated. It only brings harms. Humble people, they know when to be quiet. It's so, so hard. But humble people just recognize, God, there's some times and there's some seasons where I'm just going to let you be my defender. There's some seasons where I'm going to hold my tongue. I'm going to pray all the things that I want to yell. I'm going to say all the things to you that I want to say to them. And I'm just going to trust that at the end of the day, you are the one that's in control. Pride always needs the last word. Pride always needs to be the one that wins. Pride always needs to be the one that wins up. Humility says, I'm just going to trust God with this. I'm going to let God vindicate me. Now, of course, there's times to speak up. There's times to speak up against injustice. Again, humble people are not people that get trampled over. Humble people are not those that just get taken advantage of, but it's just that attitude that says, God, lead me in this. I don't want just my emotions to lead me and for me to flip off and for me to spout off and for me to say my piece and for me to get my way. I just want to be led. And so if you're leading me to speak, I'll speak. If you're leading me to be silent, I'll be silent. But I've committed my way to you. I've committed my words. I've committed my attitudes. And so if you're calling me to be silent, as hard as it is, I will be silent. And I'm just going to wait expectantly that at the end of the day, I don't know how it's going to work. I don't know when it's going to work. You are in control because you're God. I'm not. Humble people, we got to finish, put their hope in the Lord. Verse number 9, for evildoers, they're going to be destroyed. Those who put their hope in the Lord, they will, this is the quote, they will inherit the land. People, I say, God, my hope is in you. I don't place my hope in fairness. I don't place my hope in timing. I don't place my hope in outcomes. My hope is in God. You are faithful. And so here's the takeaway for today. Don't give in to the temptation to take matters into your own hands. I know that we're all tempted. That because God isn't doing it the way and in the timing that I want him to do it, I've got to take it from him. People that are humble, people that place their hope in God, people that trust in him, people that delight in him, they recognize, God, you see things that I can't see, and you know things that I don't know, and you see what's coming around the bend that I can't. And so instead of wrestling it from you, I'm just going to trust in you. Here's what Jesus quoted, verse number 11, the humble, the meek, they're going to inherit. That peace that you're chasing for, it's on the other side of humility. That joy that you're running after, it's on the other side of humility. The commitment that you think will come because of a thing, it comes on the other side of humility, and they will enjoy abundant prosperity. Can I ask you this question really quickly? Just, you got to think about it. Where are you trying to stay in control? Where are you trying to stay in control? What is that thing, that person, that situation that's trying to keep you agitated or angry or exhausted? Kids and future and finances and relationships and whatever it is. And some of us have come in this morning agitated and spun up and aggravated. And there's that temptation that you're facing right now. I've got to take control because God's not doing it. Trust. Commit your way. Take delight. Be silent before him. Put your hope in him. There's peace on the other side. Every time you try to control what only God can carry, peace is, it costs you your peace. The result, of, I mean, you can wrestle away control from God, but is your peace worth that? You got to decide. Because you've tried it both ways. You've tried to be in control, and let's just be honest. The only thing it's brought you is anxiety. You've tried to wrestle away control, and the only thing it's brought you is you're really short-tempered. And so Jesus says, blessed are the humble. Blessed are those who have a good view of God and a good view of themselves. They will inherit the earth. And that's my prayer for you this week, that you would choose, God, I'm going to live open-handed. I'm not going to control. I'm not going to manipulate. I'm not going to try to change. I'm just going to trust. I'm going to rest in you. Let me pray for you this morning. Maybe for you, some of you this morning, man, this is exactly what you needed. Can I just invite you as we pray? Maybe just right there in your laps. If you recognize, I've been trying to control all the things. Would you just as an act of faith, would you just open up your hands just right there in your lap and say, God, today we're just choosing to give you control. God, today we are choosing to place ourselves where you've called us to be, to do the things that you've called us to do. And Lord, we are putting you in your rightful place. We know that we try to wrestle away control. We know that we want to do it our way. Lord, this week, would you help us to trust in you? Would you help us to delight in you? For Lord, for those of us that need to be silent before you, would you help us? It's so, so hard. Lord, help us to put our hope in you, trusting that at the end of the day, you are the one that vindicate. Blessed are the humble, for they will inherit the earth. Help us, Lord, to follow you into that. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.